Welcome to the very first episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Adam.
And we are here not to talk about an episode yet, because it hasn't come out, but we are going to just introduce ourselves to those of you that don't know us from our other podcasts and talk a little bit about the show coming up. So I guess I will start. Since I've been dying to do a Star Trek podcast since, well, at least 10 years now, I think. I'm Brian, and I do another podcast on the very same network that this is on, which is Golden Spiral Media. I do a podcast on The Walking Dead called The Walking Dead Talk Through. And I'm pretty much a fanatic of Walking Dead at this point, but way before that, and probably much more so, I have been a Star Trek fan. And, you know, I have been watching it since I was a little kid. And I you know, I was very much a fan, especially I think I got to be more and more of a fan of the original series. And, you know, during the movies when I was in high school, and then my first couple of years of college. And in my third year of college, or as we say in Canada, which we're not, well, we'll get to that in a minute, but in university was the 1987. Yeah, I'm old. The Next Generation came on. So I watched that from the very beginning, and all the shows that have been on since, I watched them throughout. And I watched them religiously, and they used to have them, you know, like in Toronto, they used to play Next Generation every day at, I think, 4 o'clock or something like that. And I would watch it religiously. And
I think BBC America does that now. That's kind of half their coverage.
Yeah. Yeah. They had been playing, I want to say it was season four. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely was. It was during season four. They were playing old reruns, and it was a season one rerun of a particularly bad episode called Angel One. And I don't know if you remember that episode, Adam, but it's the one where Riker is treated like a sex object on this planet. And it's really bad.
Oh, yes, I do. Oh, that is a terrible episode.
Yes. And, you know, there were
Season one had some real stinkers in it, though.
It certainly did. But that one was one of the most stinky of the stinkers. So I watched that and I said, you know, if I had, this episode wasn't very good. You know, if I had written this episode, I would have done this, 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 and this, and it would have been much better. You know, I think I can write a better episode than what I just saw. And I thought, why don't you try? I'm like, why don't I try? So I started trying to write an episode of Next Generation. And I sent one in, sent it in the wrong format. So that came back to be unread. But I worked on it a second time, and I submitted the same again with a better understanding of what the actual format was supposed to be. And it got me a chance to pitch to the producers. And I didn't sell a story to Next Generation. By the time I finally got to pitch to them, they were in season seven. So this was like 3 years later.
That's a long process.
Oh, wasn't it? But it took me a while to write the script, actually. It was off and on, I'd say, for about the first time was, I think, a year and a half. And then to fix it up second time was probably 2 months. But anyway, I got a chance to pitch, and I almost sold the story to Next Generation. And if they had bought it, it would have been the last story they bought. But what they ended up buying, it was a story about these this race that has shape-shifting technology. Like, they could literally shape-shift ships and everything else, and they were like a new baddie for the Federation. And they were really interested in it, but they ended up instead doing the episode that kind of introduced the Maquis, which of course became a big thing in Deep Space Nine and Voyager. So,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, so anyway, especially Voyager. So I didn't get a chance to pitch, you know, I didn't sell to the Next Generation, but I kept, I had the door open. So I was able to keep, you know, throwing stories out, and they decided that they wanted to buy one for Deep Space Nine. And from the time I originally pitched it to the time it actually sold, like, literally, they told me that day that they were going to buy it. Like, so December 94, they said they were going to buy it. But they didn't actually buy it until March of 96. That's how long it took. And
wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they even, you know, kept you in mind for that long.
I know. Well, I kept pitching to them, and, you know, I had a couple of nibbles, but, you know, I still kind of kick myself, because what I should have done, since I had, like, I had pitched crap. I think I pitched at least a dozen times to them, but, anyway, so I finally did sell that story, and that, unfortunately, you will not find my name on the credits. They just bought the story idea, and they combined it with another idea. And it, but it was used in the season finale of Deep Space Nine, which is called Broken Link. And that's the episode where Odo gets sick and can't maintain a shape. And Bashir decides that the only thing they can do is send them back to the Founders. And then that part of the story was mine. And the rest of it were Gowron, you know, is accused of being a shapeshifter, and it ends up being his, the other guy, Martok. That was the other guy's story. So anyway, all I got out of it, I didn't get any screen credit. All I got was $500.
But still, it's
better than nothing.
A lot more than most people get for writing basically what amounts to fanfic.
Yeah. So over time, I will have to admit that I think part of it was, and it's funny because I'm actually watching this now, but watching Enterprise, I think that third season, and I had a whole bunch of things going on that year too. I wasn't following the show as much as I had, and the following season I met my wife and we got married. So Star Trek became a less important part of my life. But when they announced that this was coming, I said, I have to do a podcast about it. And it took a while to get everything together, but we're doing it. So enough about me. Adam, take it over. What about you?
Well, I can't say that I've ever pitched a story to Star Trek directly. I mean, I grew up on Star Trek. That was always the Saturday night thing at our house, was to watch the original series on at 7:30 on WUAB channel 43. Came on right after the Muppet Show. So that was always our entertainment. And I was pretty much hooked ever since. The nice thing about being the age I was, which we're talking in the mid 80s, so I was, you know, not even 10 years old yet. Sorry, Brian, you are a bit older than me.
That's okay.
But the nice thing about that is, obviously, the production value of the original series does not hold up to modern standards. But when you're that age, you just don't care.
Yeah.
So I got sucked in by the characters and the stories, and it kept an eye open for it ever since. It was, you know, a nostalgic bit of my childhood at that point. So as it went through syndication, I would always check it out and catch more episodes. but I'd never seen the full series. So when finally things like Netflix and whatnot came around, and I'm talking Netflix back when it was a disc-based service only.
Oh,
that's when I actually was able to get all the original series out and, you know, check them all out. And then, like you, Next Generation came on in 87. So I watched that from day one. Really jarring. My older brother is actually a devout Kirk follower, so he never really bit into Next Generation because, I mean, you know, the differences between Picard and Kirk. So obviously we were a house divided on that one because I thought that the storytelling obviously in Next Generation was much more advanced. I liked having the ensemble cast in there, and of course the effects, you know, were up to modern standards at the time. They were contemporary.
Yeah.
So that show absolutely hooked pretty much all of us except for my brother, who refused to, you know, buy into it because he thought that Kirk and Spock and crew were the superior Enterprise. But I never left it after that. You know, anytime there was a movie coming out or the new series, I fell off a little bit with Deep Space Nine and Voyager because really those were departures from really like what I feel is like the core of Star Trek storytelling. They explored a lot of issues, but the whole format changed into more of a, you know, a serialized kind of format. So once you fell off the wagon, you were pretty much lost for at least half a season, you know, as they kept on the plot threads going. And really, Deep Space Nine, just it didn't grab me at first. You know, one of the hallmarks of Star Trek series, it seems, is to really be on unstable footing in the first season as the writers kind of find the characters, you know. So I wasn't really hooked by Deep Space Nine to begin with. I kept on watching it for the tie-ins to events that were taking place in Next Generation. But, you know, it wasn't really my thing. And then, you know, come to find out later, of course, as storytelling has evolved on TV and you get more serialized things like Lost and, you know, more modern series like Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, Deep Space Nine probably holds up the best of any of those series now, I think. So I've gone back and I watched that in its entirety, fell in love with it all over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just fed right into Voyager, and say what you will about that series, but at least it, you know, it kept the universe alive.
Yeah.
And that feeds right into Enterprise, which that one got canceled after four seasons, but the production value was so high on it. It was just a joy to watch, to go back to original series aliens like the Andorians. And, you know, just see the makeup updates and all the effects being improved. It's a gorgeous show. I just kind of wish it had a little bit more time because I think it was just finding its legs when it got canceled.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I've been preparing actually for this show, is going back and watching Enterprise on Netflix. And we're recording this on the Wednesday after Labor Day, and over the Labor Day weekend, I watched, oh geez, probably half the show, like over 50 episodes. Yeah. So it would have been, so I'm in, you know, fairly deep in the season three now. And I think the first couple of seasons were really good. And from what I remember, and you know, I'm not up to that yet, but season four was really good. But and they try to do this, you know, a serialized story in season three with the Zindi, and I just don't think it worked. You know, I think part of it was 24 episodes is a really long time to carry a story, and it got away from, you know, the, like you said, like discovering those first races, the Andorians, you know, a lot of Klingon stuff and of course Vulcan stuff, and they got away from it. And I don't think, you know, I remember this back when I was originally watching it, but you know, since I've been watching season three right now, I just feel like it didn't work. And I think it also suffered from being on UPN, number one, and number two, just, you know, 18 years of, you know, 24th century or whatever. That actually, this was 22nd century, but anyway, 18 years of modern Trek. And I think people just got tired of it. So it was, you know, I think it could have really been a great series if it just got more love there, but they canceled it. Sucks.
Yeah. Audiences were a little tired, and I think it was really hamstrung by having to be a prequel. You know, there's only so much you can do when the last movie leaves off with, we've got time travel in First Contact, and we can make clothes, and we've got holodecks and quantum torpedoes and wormholes, and now we're going back to using tow cables because we don't even trust transporters. It just doesn't have the same impact.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that the show was headed in an interesting direction, but it does seem like the writers kind of got scared of telling too many stories that rather than try to bolt up nicely to the beginning of the original series, they instead kind of got scared of that idea and just came up with the Zindi and just sent them out into the nether regions so they could tell all these stories that had no attachment to any previous canon.
Yeah. I think it was a mistake looking at it, but you know, the main reason why I think I decided that I'm going to go back and watch Enterprise was like, I think I rewatched the first couple of seasons. Like I used to record everything to VHS back then. And I did do that for Enterprise, but the season 3 and season 4, I don't think I ever went back and watched. And in many ways, because of all the updates and things like that, which we'll get to, I think, in a few minutes, this in a lot of ways is a sequel to that show more than kind of a prequel to the original series.
That's a lot of what it seems like. It seems like there was a big tonal shift in Star Trek in general with Enterprise, where they went. First off, it was the first one that really put an emphasis on visuals. I mean, they were always trying to do what they could with the budget to impress people,
yeah,
right down to the Dominion War and Deep Space Nine. But Enterprise was the first Star Trek series that actually was filmed in HD.
Yeah.
And also the technology in our own world had caught up enough where they could have a lot of practical effects. Like when they're looking at a monitor, it's actually a computer monitor instead, yeah, of a superimposed graphic or a light up, you know, piece of plexiglass stencil.
Yeah.
So I think it's taking a lot of that for inspiration, and it's taking a lot of visual risks, obviously. But I wonder if it's also following in some of maybe Enterprise's negative footsteps of kind of getting away from what Trek is all about.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. You know, we haven't seen really anything except for the trailers so far. You know, I there are certain things that I really like that what they've done, but certain things I don't like. One thing in particular I don't like, and we'll get to that, I think. But you had it on the notes, but you didn't mention it. Two things actually in the notes, but we might as well talk about this. Visually, the show, at least from the trailers, looks like a lot of the Kelvin verse. So, but yeah, they continue to say that this is part of the Prime timeline and not part of the movie, you know, the movie reboot timeline. How have you thought, you know, the new movies, what do you think of them?
You know, I'm not overall a fan, and I think they're enjoyable movies, but they don't bolt up well to the original 10 movies. I think they put a much larger emphasis on trying to get that summer blockbuster crowd.
Yeah.
So they put a lot more emphasis on action and visuals instead of the more cerebral storytelling that Star Trek is known for. In fact, you know, my other podcast is a Star Wars podcast, and things, yeah, exactly. It is possible to be fans of both franchises. And my biggest critique, as much as I loved the 2009 Star Trek, my biggest critique against it was the main reason why I was excited for J.J. Abrams to take over for Force Awakens, for rebooting Star Wars, because I felt like Star Trek had taken on too much of an action theme, and it was focused way more on the character dynamics, which has always been a hallmark of Star Trek, but it didn't really, they didn't think their way through their problems. They shot their way through their problems. It was act first, think later, instead of vice versa. And the whole style of the film, to me, looked like it fit for Star Wars, but wasn't smart enough for Star Trek.
I agree with that. I think, like, the first movie, even though it was, you know, very action-oriented, that one I really enjoyed, maybe because I was starving for Star Trek at that point. The second one, I didn't like too much, and I especially didn't like Khan in that.
Yeah.
I thought that was a huge miss, even though I love the actor, but, you know, just who they chose to play it.
I think the title of that movie was actually very prescient, because if we had known what was to come in the third movie.
Yeah.
I mean, Star Trek truly was going into darkness on that one. That thing hit streaming so fast.
Yeah. And, you know, I know a lot of people love that one, and I guess, I don't know. I don't know. It didn't work for me like it did for some people. I don't know. The third one I'm talking about. And then it was like a modest bomb, I think. It certainly did the least of the three reboot movies.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, so much so that I don't think they're doing a fourth currently. I think that's kind of been shelved for the time being.
So just to since we kind of glazed over it. So you do a Star Wars podcast, and now you're doing a Star Trek podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Having fun with that soundboard over there, aren't you?
Oh yeah.
Oh boy. Now the reason I'm doing this whole show is because I have been a fan of both franchises for basically my whole life, and I never had anyone to talk Trek with before, so I always kind of had to keep that in the closet while all my friends are playing with their Star Wars toys. So, this is a good opportunity to get into some of these things. You had mentioned the visuals in Enterprise and the Kelvinverse and whatnot. So can you step back for a second? Because we know there are some reasons why the show looks the way it does, but there are some in-universe explanations that I don't really get, and maybe some of our listeners have the same questions. Starting with the 2009 reboot, as I understand it, the timelines began to fork with George Kirk, right? On board the Kelvin, so-called the Kelvinverse, correct?
Yes. Thor caused the whole split. But I wouldn't even say it was George Kirk. And if you don't get that reference, the same actor that plays Thor was, Captain Kirk's dad. So, anyway.
Which, good casting, by the way. I liked him in that role.
I thought so, too. And he's actually got some range. That Thor Ragnarok movie looks really good. But,
so here's where my confusion comes in. If that's where the timeline forked, then anything that existed before that moment in time should be identical between the two universes, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So how do you get from Khan in Space Seed and through Wrath of Khan? How do you get Ricardo Montalban being played by Benedict Cumberbatch?
That's what when I heard that there was, he was cast on the movie as the bad guy. And I don't know if it was, I think the word was out fairly quickly that, he was actually Khan. I just like, how can he be Khan? He looks nothing like Ricardo Montalban. You know, like, he's a very pale white guy, and Ricardo Montalban is, much more brown skinned, whatever, you might want to strike that out. I don't know. But anyway, complexion wise, much different.
Definitely. Yeah. Very different ethnicity.
Yes. So that I really had issue with, and just like we've seen this was funny in the same actor was involved in a whitewashing thing, but not for his character, but in Doctor Strange. I know that there was a character in Doctor Strange that was in the comic books, an Asian woman, I think, or it's certainly an Asian character, but in the Doctor Strange was played by Tilda Swinton, you know, so that's kind of crazy.
So yeah, I don't know why they had to do that, but that confused me. And obviously the Klingons look very different, and the Romulans for that matter. So the well-established aliens, their physiology changed between the Kelvinverse and the Primeverse.
And
here we're seeing a show that is supposedly attached to the Primeverse, but with very Kelvinverse looking Klingons.
Well, I wouldn't even say that they're Kelvin universe looking Klingons. They're a whole other thing entirely. And that, I don't know. I mean, the Klingons that I am used to, and you know, I'm seeing them even in Enterprise watching it, are, you know, the TNG style Klingons with, you know, the long hair and the ridges and all of that stuff. And yeah, they got the ridges, but they're bald and they're wearing things that we don't normally see Klingons wear, or at least some of them are. Mm-hmm. And okay, the thing that makes me go, oh, all right, I'll buy it. I want to see what you really have in store. The Klingons have looked different in practically every phase of Star Trek. You know, they didn't have any ridges or anything like that. They were basically, you know, wearing dark makeup in the original, like kind of greasy looking people. I hate to say that, but
no, that's what I was going to say. I think they look like coal miners or something.
And then, you know, you see them in the original motion picture, and they, you know, it was like they had a spine that went all the way down, but they look a lot more similar to how we see Klingons, you know, in the Next Generation. In Star Trek III, they look different than they did in the motion picture, much more, pretty much like they did in Next Generation. And then, like I say, at the time, you know, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise, they all had this look of, you know, the ridges and, you know, crinkle nose and long hair, usually. Mm-hmm. And now they've got no hair at all, and they've got, you know, like the one character, which we were talking about before we started recording, T'Kuvma. You see him and he's wearing this like really ornamental outfit, you know, with a bunch of spiky things on it. And it's cool, but it doesn't look Klingon to me. It just looks like another alien race. So I don't know. I'm since the Klingons have continued to change in, you know, over the years, I'm going to buy it, but I really think it was kind of a mistake for them to do this unless they can explain it. And I'm hoping that they can explain it. So,
yeah, you can buy into some updating because as ideas mature, they just change over time. And this is also the first series that they're shooting in 4K.
Right.
So they have to, you know, step up the costumes to suit.
That's
but
true.
Just because you have to add detail doesn't mean you have to completely change the design of the characters.
Right.
Especially when you're talking about an entire race. Like you said, they have to find some story reason to explain how these Klingons look so different, yet are apparently canonically related to the Klingons that we've seen before.
What I've heard, and we're kind of bouncing all around, we don't really have a format for this episode, but what I heard come out of Star Trek Las Vegas, which I think was beginning of August, there was a panel there that explained that there, I think, are 24 Klingon houses, and they're all different, and they even grew up on different worlds and things like that, so they evolve differently. So anyway, I'll allow it, and I'm, you know, I mean, in the end, if it's executed well, it'll become a non-point, I think. But it is one of the things that, you know, when I first saw the Klingon in the trailer, I'm like, that's a Klingon? Really? Why does that Klingon look that way? And with ears that are like sunk into its skull and, you know, things like that, that I don't ever remember seeing Klingons looking like. But
the one thing I'm really excited to see about the Klingons in this series, though, is to see a further expansion of their culture. Because for so long, they were so one-dimensional.
Yeah.
They weren't even feasible. Like, wait a minute. So all these people do is hunt and fight and drink a lot of blood wine, I guess.
Like, today is a good day to die.
Right? Well, is today a good day to be an architect or raise a family? When do people do the other things that societies do? How do they build spaceships if all they're doing is – busy putting daggers in each other's backs because they've got a war between the houses, you know? So to see this expanded view of having multiple houses and maybe each one has its own belief system, and there's a whole culture behind them now that actually makes sense. That seems to be a really exciting opportunity to explore.
Yeah. In Enterprise, they talked a little bit about the Klingons and how not all Klingons were warriors, but, you know, they didn't really dive into it deep, you know, and like I was saying before with the Zindi, they kind of got away from that whole storyline. But I know that one of the stories that's coming up that I haven't seen yet is a story where they kind of explain the Klingon, you know, how the original Klingons didn't have the ridges, that it was some kind of virus or disease or something, but I haven't gotten to that episode yet, but I'm very curious. I think that was season 4 episode. So hopefully I'll get to see that before Discovery starts. So, okay. So let's move on. Well, the one thing we didn't say is we work together. So that's kind of different. We're actually, you know, on my Walking Dead podcast, both Fear and The Walking Dead, my hosts for each of those shows, I've never met them. But unlike that, I have met Adam. He sits a row over. So, but we don't work together, but we have the same boss. So, but
we can make the in jokes at the office, and we know what the other one's talking about. Yeah. We're close enough for that. See, and I've got just the opposite, where we're doing this over Skype and my other show is all done in person. We get together. It's my brother and one of our best friends. So we just get together in his basement and do it there.
Yeah. I don't think you said what the name of your Star Wars podcast is.
Oh, well, it's for the very casual fan. It's called the Nerf Herder Council. So we're not the smartest bunch, so we don't profess to be the Jedi Council. We're the Nerf Herders. And we discuss, you know, random topics, anything that kind of comes to mind.
Yeah, and I've been listening since I, you know, got to know Adam a little bit. And it's really good, actually. You guys should, if you're a Star Wars fan, those guys are good. So,
thank you. I'm told we have a low entry point. If you don't know much or anything about Star Wars, there's still probably enough stuff to keep you up to speed and entertained.
Yeah. Well, it's very conversational. So, yeah. What's the website for that?
You can just go to nhcpodcast.com and all of our episodes are right there.
And I realize I didn't say my website name. It's walkingdeadtalkthrough.com. And if you're searching in Apple Podcasts, you can just, you know, search The Walking Dead, or you can put in Talk Through and you will find us immediately. So, but I do we cover both Fear the Walking Dead and The Walking Dead. And this is part of the crappy part about this, the schedules of Fear and The Walking Dead are running dead on collision with Discovery. Both the Walking Dead shows and this show are going to release their episodes the same night every week. And that really sucks for me. I wish it was, I wish like one was, you know, on like a Wednesday or a Thursday night, cause it would give me a little more time, but I'm dedicated to doing both podcasts. So, I have to make it work. So
you're going to have a lot of TV to watch between Saturday, Sunday and Monday. That's for sure.
You better believe it. So, okay. So a couple other things about the show, we talked about the Klingons already. CBS All Access. Okay. So in Canada, and I got this, confirmed, from, Mark Decote, who has his podcast on, Solo Talk Media and, friend of the Golden Spiral Media Network, certainly. I was talking to him earlier today just to confirm this, and the show in Canada will be on weekly on Space, which is, for the American listeners, it is similar to the Sci-Fi Channel. That show's on basic cable, basically. So they're going to get it every week without having to subscribe to anything. It's also on a network called Crave TV, which is owned by the same company, which is Bell, Bell Media or whatever. They're, you know, telephone company and everything else. They own probably half of Canada at this point. But that Crave TV is like Hulu, I guess. And everywhere else, it's on Netflix. But unfortunately for us as, U.S. residents, and I mentioned before, yes, I'm Canadian, but I've lived in the States now 17 years. So
we'll get that Tim Hortons for you someday.
Yeah. I don't know why you have to drive to, I think, Toledo to get Tim Hortons. But anyway, the first episode is going to be on regular CBS, and then the rest of it, you got to pay at least $5.99 a month, and I say at least, to get the rest of the show. So I wonder if we are going to have more listeners that are in Canada and internationally than we will for the U.S., because I know a lot of people are not too happy about the fact that they've got to pay $5.99 a month, I think. And worse, if you, that actually comes with commercials. So you have to pay, I think it's $9.99 a month. I'm going to check that, just to get it without commercials.
Yeah. That could be a major, major hindrance to the success of this show, I think. I don't know what the international audience is like for Trek versus the US, but you can't ignore the US market. And to put a show back on the air that hasn't been on the air since, 2004, I believe, was when Enterprise was canceled.
It was canceled in 2005.
2005. Okay. Yeah. So we've got a 12-year lapse with no Star Trek on TV. And the last show was canceled due to low ratings. And now they're going to ask people to pay money for something that looks like a radical departure from what they've seen before. That's a huge gamble.
Yeah, it is. And I understand why they're doing it. And, that it's kind of like their launch, of this network or whatever, the streaming service. But, and it's not, I mean, it's been available now for a while. And I know I think it's called The Good Fight, which is like a sequel to The Good Wife, is on there. And, so I think they claim to have 1.5 million subscribers at this point. That's not a lot. And not all of those people are going to be watching Star Trek. And I'm sure that they're going to increase in members. I'm sure some people will, at least try it out. But I know a lot of people that I've talked to, both online and in person, are not happy about this. And I totally understand that. So it's a gamble, may really hurt the show getting traction. If people aren't actually seeing it, then they're not going to want to do it.
Yeah, I see it going one of two ways. On the positive outlook, you could look at it and say that because it's now 2017 and people are used to paying for online streaming services, that having a basically CBS exclusive catalog of programming isn't going to be a major barrier to success. On the other hand, you look back at the history of these things and how Netflix grew to be the giant it was by amassing a large catalog from a whole bunch of providers and making sure that their unoriginal choice selections were popular first. And then they leveraged on top of that with Orange is the New Black and, you know, Narcos now and House of Cards and all this great original programming. So to start with what's basically a fledgling service right now and try to hook viewers and subscribers with original programming, it's a gamble either way. It could be a huge hit or it could be a terrible disaster.
Now, I've heard Les Moonves say that one thing that they did was by selling the rights to Netflix and I guess Bell in Canada, they essentially paid for the cost of the show. So that kind of gives them a little bit of a buffer. You know, it doesn't have to be successful for it to continue because it's essentially paid for. But still, you know, it's like, mind you, you know, people pay for Netflix and they're used to it. People pay for Amazon Prime. People pay for Hulu. And, you know, I think it's kind of in the order that they do. I mean, Amazon Prime, you know, you get your shipping and all that stuff. And then you get your video. And Netflix, I think, you know, they've established themselves as kind of being, you know, the number one streaming platform. And then, you know, a lot of people get Hulu, but I don't think it's as successful as the other two. But, you know, now somebody's going to have to watch Star Trek. They're going to have to pay yet another service. And I'm on their website and they really have it hidden as to the cost. All they're saying is try it free. And you know, you go on their FAQ and it's difficult to even find, you know, what the cost is. I believe it's $5.99 with commercials and $9.99 without, but if I'm wrong, you can correct me in feedback, whatever. But I believe that's what it is. So, but it sucks. You know, it's I'm not too happy about it, but I'm going to do it because it's Star Trek. And you know, I wish that it was on Netflix or, you know, some other service or, you know, or on CBS so that I didn't have to pay. Or I didn't have to pay, you know, for yet another service. But, you know, I'm willing to try it and, you know, I'm covering the show, so I'm definitely going to keep it, but I don't know if I'll be keeping it in the off season, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I just wonder how many more original offerings or all access only offerings that they're going to put on there. Because as you said, $5.99 is reasonable with ads. Honestly, that annoys me. If I'm paying money directly to watch the programming, then that is your fee. You shouldn't be able to sell to advertisers and subscribers at the same time. But that's kind of the era we're living in, isn't it? Where you go to the movie theater and you're inundated with Coke ads and everything else before the show. Even though you've just paid $15 for your movie ticket, you still get commercials. But to charge, like you were saying, possibly like $9.99 a month to get commercial free access, you better have some really good content on there because you can get Netflix for less than that and their catalog is deeper. Hulu can be very cheap. Unless you're an established premium player like HBO or Showtime, where you can do an add-on to some other streaming service, which is totally optional and already commercial free, it's going to be tough to convince people that that's worth the price. The only trade-off I could say is that if you do something like first run TV through Amazon Prime, if you want to watch The Walking Dead, for example, which I've heard you're kind of a fan of that show, Brian, you got to pay $2.99 an episode to get it in HD. So that's $12 a month just to watch one series. So by that logic, it's actually a relative bargain.
Well, all I'll say, well, I think Negan would say about that.
Are you kidding me?
Yes. Yes,
I'm trying to come to their back. I'm trying to justify this because I think the other problem is it's on CBS, or at least a product of CBS, and networks are seen as passe these days.
Yeah.
So they're fighting against their own stigma, really.
Well, yeah, and the whole thing, like the Kelvin universe, you know, Kelvin verse versus the Prime timeline. A lot of that happened because of rights. Like, once upon a time, Viacom owned the whole Star Trek license, and they splintered, right, and became the CBS stuff got spun off. So originally they weren't together, but I think Viacom bought CBS and then they spun it off and it became its own company again. Well, when they did that with the Star Trek license, Paramount, which is owned by Viacom, they own the movies and CBS owns the TV show. They had to come to an agreement, and I think as part of that agreement, from what I've heard, that they had to, you know, go on a timeline that wasn't affected by, you know, CBS, right, and vice versa, which I think is a good idea in a way, because it doesn't screw things up for this show, but it's the whole weird thing. And I don't know how much you've followed the Star Trek Axanar saga.
That is, I think the story about Axanar is better than the story within Axanar, actually. It's so many twists and turns. And how long has that been going on now? Years, right?
Yeah. And they have come to an agreement, but, you know, the show, you know, that they had done what I think a Kickstarter to try to, you know, get it developed. And I think they were trying to, I don't know if they had the studio they were renting out or something. I don't know, that I'm a little unclear about that. But anyway, there was a thing where, both CBS and Paramount were looking at the Axanar, people and saying, you guys are trying to make money on Star Trek, and you know, we've been okay with the fan, you know, fiction, but we're not okay if you're going to try to make money on it. And they sued them, and they came to an agreement. I guess they're going to be able to make Axanar, but they're kind of handcuffed. They can only make, like, I think a 30-minute show in 2 15-minute segments or something like that. I think they're allowing ones that are, you know, in post right now, like Star Trek Continues, which, by the way, is really good, really well made. But they're, you know, they're wrapping up their episodes. I think they have two coming out after Discovery comes out, and then they're basically, you know, packing it up. And the Axanar, like I say, they can only make the 30 minutes and then they're done. So it sucks, but what are you going to do?
Isn't that amazing that the fandom is so fervorous for the franchise that they've taken to making their own because the studios can't produce something that they like, or in some cases at all, in the case of Star Trek TV?
How does that compare to Star Wars? Is there a lot of Star Wars, you know, fan movies and that?
Yeah, and there's been a major shift in the attitude towards them recently, too.
With Disney. Yeah.
Going back to before when Disney bought Star Wars, there was not only Star Wars fan films, because George Lucas was the ultimate independent filmmaker, but even at the triannual Star Wars convention created by fans called Star Wars Celebration, they had fan film awards. They had an entire screening room dedicated to round the clock fan film streaming, and people would vote on their favorites. It was fully endorsed by Lucasfilm at the time, and that's been completely shuttered since 2012 when Disney took over. So it's very similar to what Paramount and Viacom are doing with the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see you have to protect your intellectual property, but when it's this obvious what the fans want and you can't come to terms on it, it just seems like a tremendously missed opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. What I was looking while you were talking, and so, like I said, the whole $5.99 a month, $9.99 a month, they have it kind of obfuscated. But what they are pushing is an annual membership, which is they do have listed there. It's $59.99 a year with commercials, or $99.99 a year without commercials. So I don't know. I think that's quite a big difference. I may just have to grin and bear it and watch commercials. I don't know, but we'll see.
So basically, for the same price as MLB TV, you can get CBS year round.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, Amazon, call. Same. It's the same price as Amazon Prime, too. That's $99.
So will CBS deliver me dog food to my door as well?
I don't think so.
I gotta say Amazon Prime's the better deal at this point then.
Yeah. I think so too, especially since they bought Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now their TV offerings are still not up to snuff though. I'm sorry. I tried watching the Tick pilot and no bueno. I love that series desperately when it was on TV before, both incarnations, but this new one is no. Amazon has yet to catch up to Netflix and Hulu on their original offerings for sure.
So anyway, we've been kind of off about talking about CBS, yeah. But, and I guess Blaine has something to say.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Yeah, for you listeners, I will still have sound effects. I don't really have any Star Trek stuff yet. I got to work on that, but I've been kind of waiting for the actual show to pick up some stuff, but I'll probably dig into classic Next Generation, come up with a few things. But anyway, okay, so originally the showrunner of this show was Brian Fuller, and I actually pitched to him back in the day a couple of times to Voyager. So, you know, I have had some contact with this guy, not in person. It was always over the phone. But when he was announced as a showrunner for it, I was really psyched because, you know, he obviously had the pedigree from, you know, working on Star Trek. And I think he'd done some Deep Space Nine stuff and some Voyager stuff. And, you know, has gone on to, you know, Hannibal, I think is probably his most famous show that he's done. He's done a few other ones. He's also American Gods right now. But they let him go. So that was kind of sucky. But then I found out that he was the guy behind the Klingons and the new look. So, like I say, that's odd. But one of the things that he did, you know, bring was that it's going to be a serialized story, which... You know, we talked about this already, I think, but, you know, this isn't the first serialized track because we had serialized stories in Deep Space Nine and Enterprise, and I guess to a lesser extent in Voyager, but this is the, you know, where there aren't going to be, you know, episodic, you know, standalones, so to speak. They'll all be tied into one big story. And also, I don't know how much you've followed it, but the Orville is debuting this week, actually, September 10th. And that show is, you know, by Seth MacFarlane, and it's very Next Generation looking.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to be episodic, not serialized. So it's a lot of ways, it seems like it's going to be a little bit of a throwback with kind of a, you know, Next Generation meets Galaxy Quest kind of thing. What do you think about that? Like compared to this show?
Well, I think it's got a lot of potential because it is a very different take. And I mean, Seth MacFarlane does a good job of being irreverent with pretty sacred material I'll admit that one of my favorite spoofs on Star Wars is his trilogy of Family Guy specials, for all very different reasons. But you know, he's a fan of the genre. He bankrolled Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson. So he clearly knows what he's doing with the material. So if he chose to take the project on, I'm assuming it's going to be not so much lampooning it in a snarky way, but in a loving way.
Yeah.
So I think it's got potential. What I think is interesting is that it's coming out at the same time as this is, and where this seems to be trying to set itself apart from Star Trek that came before and forge its own identity. The Orville is leaning very heavily on everything that came before in Star Trek and playing off of those tropes.
Yeah. And it's also got a Star Trek pedigree. I mean, one of the executive producers is someone who is very, very big in the Star Trek world, Brandon Braga, you know? So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I think he wrote at least two of the movies. He was, you know, a big part of the later seasons of Next Generation, you know, was heavily involved, and I think was showrunner at one point in Voyager, was a showrunner of Enterprise for the first three seasons. And, you know, so his pedigree for Star Trek is like way out there. And they've also, you know, they got the actress that I can't remember her name, but she played Cassidy Yates on Deep Space Nine. And there's
Yes, that's right. I'm gonna have to look this one up. I'm sorry.
They also got Bashir's dad is a guest on there. Jonathan Frakes. Actually, Jonathan Frakes is an interesting one. Of course, he played Riker in Next Generation, but you know, he's been a TV director, as you know, several of the actors from Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine have gone on to directing a lot of TV. Jonathan Frakes, Roxanne Dawson, LeVar Burton, Robert Duncan McNeil, and yeah, so Voyager, Tim Russ from Voyager. They've all done a lot of TV directing. And I know that Jonathan Frakes and I think Robert Duncan McNeil too are directing episodes of The Orville. And I know that Jonathan Frakes is actually directing both shows. So episodes for season 1B, which we haven't talked about how they're releasing it, but supposedly they're going to do, they're going to be going weekly until I think the last episode they're going to show in the half season is on November 5th in the States and Canada. And then it's going to come back sometime in January for the last half of the season. Mm-hmm. One of the episodes in the latter half is Frakes directed episode. So, and of course, you know, he directed one of the best. Actually, he directed two of the Next Generation movies, but one of the best, I think, was First Contact. Of all of them, and you know, certainly probably the best Next Generation movie they did. Of course, I love the Borg. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but at work I have a Locutus that is at my desk. So
no, I've never seen that.
I gotta show you that. Yeah, I've had him for years, and you know, I've moved probably, you know, a dozen times over that period, and I've still got the little Locutus doll. So he's about maybe 3 or 4 inches tall. But
should I get you a Hue to go with him?
I should. Yeah. Get a, like to have a little Worf. Yeah. So that's another thing too. So we talked about the Klingons. I used to love the Klingons, and I am really pumped by, you know, some of the things that they've talked about with the Klingons. I just don't know what to make of this makeup. So one of the things, apparently a lot of the Klingon dialogue is going to be subtitled. So it's going to be in full Klingon. So the actors are speaking Klingon, and, you know, Kopya, and all the things that they will say.
I wonder, is this official Klingon as defined, or are they making up a new language?
No, it's
official. If they're changing the appearance, they could change the language too.
Supposedly,
say it's a dialect.
Supposedly, one of the staff is a Klingon authority, and like is one of the best. I don't know, interpreters or whatever. Like knows the Klingon language better than almost everyone out there. So and they also have like a dialogue coach. So yeah, it's supposed to be full Klingon. So. But you know, that makes you wonder too. It's like, why aren't there other languages? I mean, it stands to reason that there'd be more than just a single Klingon language.
Yeah. This is where you've got to set aside logic at least a little bit. I mean, you think about it, there's so many problems with the scope of the storytelling. You could also say, well, how is it that they always beam down to the exact coordinates in the center of the one thing on the entire planet that needs to be dealt with? And, you know, why does everyone, like I said, one-dimensional species in general, why are the Klingons are the warriors, the Romulans are the backstabbers, and the Vulcans are the logical ones? And, yeah. So you got to scale it down a little bit to make a manageable story. But yeah, you're right. It would be interesting to have something like, okay, this is going to focus on the different houses of Klingons. Maybe each house has its own sort of dialect.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that I'm pumped about was, or should I say is, when they announced who was playing the main character. And, you know, since I'm a Walking Dead fanatic and do a podcast on The Walking Dead, hearing that Sonequa Martin-Green, you know, playing Michael Burnham, which, you know, makes you wonder. I mean, I've heard of other women with the name of Michael, but bit of a head scratcher.
Mm-hmm. That's going to throw some people off for sure.
Yeah. So with her playing the lead, I was really happy to hear that, but at the same time, it really screwed things up because it got leaked. And you notice that they didn't actually officially announce that she was, you know, the actor portraying the main character until The Walking Dead season ended. And, you know, the fate of her character was finally revealed. But not to spoil anyone that hasn't watched The Walking Dead. But yeah, so she's not on the show anymore. I'll just say that. And it was kind of sucky that they kind of spoiled The Walking Dead. She kind of figured out, well, you know, she's probably not going to be playing lead on both shows. So
mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, you know, she was in the main cast, but she was definitely not lead on the show, but now she's lead on Star Trek. So, you know, I'm really happy that they picked her. I think she's going to be great in the role. She's really good. But it's interesting because she's not the captain. And, you know,
that's going to be a weird bit of storytelling right there to put the focus on a subordinate.
Yeah. And you know, so we see in like the first trailer, we don't even see the captain of the Discovery. We see Captain Georgiou, I think is how you say her name, who's played by what's her name?
You stepped in it now.
I know. Michelle Yeoh, of course. Philippe Georgiou. Captain of the Shenzhou. So, yeah. And then only in the second trailer do we finally discover that, well, we, you know, heard the casting news. And I'm really psyched about this. Jason Isaacs playing Captain Lorca, who's the captain of the Discovery. I don't know if you're, you know, familiar with him. One of the shows that I really enjoyed, it didn't last very long, but was called Awake. And he was the main character on awake, and he was great in that show. And I know he's, you know, been on lots of other shows and other, I think he was on, what is it called? The OA? Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
And he was also, you know, played a big part in the Harry Potter movies. But he's an excellent actor. Michelle Yeoh's excellent. The guy that they have playing Sarek is also great. I loved him. One of the shows I really enjoyed just ended recently was Orphan Black, and that's James Frain playing Sarek. He's really good. Of course, make you wonder, well, why would they have him on there? And supposedly Sarek is a foster father of Michael Burnham, and that she grew up on Vulcan. I don't know why they had to include a character we already knew, but, you know, I mean, he is an interesting character, so, and he's a great actor, so I'm really enthused about him. And, of course, Doug Jones. You familiar with Doug Jones at all?
No, not particularly. No, Chuck Jones did the Looney Tunes, so I don't think it's him.
Well, Doug Jones is really known for his ability to play like alien or, you know, otherworldly characters. He's played in a lot of Guillermo del Toro films.
Oh, okay. Well, he's certainly got an almost alien physiology. I mean, I'm looking at him in this publicity still, and I don't know a single human that's built like that.
He's very thin, and he played. What I know him from is Falling Skies. He played the role of Cochise. And
oh, so I have seen him before then. That's a great series.
Yeah. Well, it was.
Yes.
It really got bad the last two seasons, but not because of him. But yeah, so he's great on there. And, you know, another thing, this is the first openly gay character in as part of the main cast of Star Trek. Anthony Rapp is playing, I think it's Lieutenant Stamets, which is good. I think that's fantastic. About time that they had gay characters in, you know, it's the 23rd century. It's time to, you know, have, you know, just gay relationships on a Star Trek thing. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I know a lot of people are making it that way because I'm used to seeing, you know, I mean, there's a lot of gay characters on Walking Dead, for example. And, it's getting with the times, I think.
Yeah, and it's also in the spirit of the original, you know, series and Gene Roddenberry's vision for the future.
Yeah. The other character that I know is in the original series that they brought back is Harry Mudd.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice.
Yeah. So I don't know what, you know, he was always kind of a scoundrel.
You know, I have a soft spot for scoundrels.
So we'll see what, yeah, of course, Han Solo, but we'll see, you know, what that character is going to be like. But I don't know how he plays into this. I guess supposedly we think this show is going to deal with the Klingon War, and they're publicizing it as, 10 years before Kirk Spock, you know, but also, okay, so it's 10 years before the original series, but the Enterprise existed at that time. The Cage was, which was the original pilot for Star Trek, you know, the one where Spock
Captain
is
Pike.
Yeah, Captain Pike, and we see Spock and he's kind of like yelling a lot in that episode.
Yep.
Anyway, that's roughly in the same you know, time frame. So, you know, so some of it I understand, like they've updated the uniforms, and, you know, I think in 2017, for people that are new to the show, if the Star Trek, you know, officers were wearing pajamas, which essentially, you know, looking back at their outfits, from the original series, and, you know, in the first season of Next Generation, was almost like they were wearing leotards or something. You know,
if you're constantly exploring strange new worlds, it's a high stress environment. You've got to be comfortable.
Yeah. So I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. Supposedly they say that they're sticking to canon. You know, that much is to be seen, but I would rather them stick to the lore of Star Trek and, you know, try to stick to canon than I can grant how, you know, the effects and, you know, how the keyboards and, you know, whatever the interfaces that they use are going to be up to date, and, you know, the ships are going to look a little more, you know, futuristic or modernized compared to the way they did in 66. I can live with that as long as they don't really depart from the canon, you know. And I'm not a slave to canon, but, you know, there is a 50 years of storytelling that to me they need to follow. And if they don't, if they start like really changing stuff, then to me it's a reboot. But
I just hope it doesn't fall back like Enterprise did on the temporal Cold War. As soon as time travel becomes their get out of jail free card for any plot holes or continuity problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was kind of a mistake that they did in the Enterprise, but at the same time, you know, I think some of the story for Enterprise is really good. I am enjoying going back, watching those episodes. A lot of them, you know, like I say, I haven't seen them since they were first on. So it's almost like watching it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
now I'm looking at the publicity stills that TrekMovie.com posted today.
Yeah.
And you're talking about continuity. Now, is this set in the Primeverse or the Kelvinverse? Because as I look at these, and I'm not trying to make a joke here, but all the stills, they have lens flare like crazy. If they're not trying to go for the Kelvin aesthetic, they're really doing a poor job of getting away from it.
I'm taking a look right now.
I mean, it's pretty egregious. It's they're full of even off-camera lens flares, so you don't even know what's causing the flare to begin with. Now, my understanding was that as you were explaining the business behind the whole show, this being a CBS property, this is in the Prime universe. This is supposed to connect to Picard and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and all of those shows, not connect to the movies that Paramount's been putting out, correct?
That's correct. I think that they're borrowing heavily from the movies in terms of look. And, you know, I don't have that much of a problem because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Star Trek Continues is really well done. But if CBS turned around a show that looked like it was 1966 with, you know, updated special effects, I would be disappointed, you know? So as a fan show, it's kind of cool, especially how well done it is, for, you know, shoestring budget, but I don't think that that's what CBS should do. And I think they're, you know, let's face it. Okay. I'm older. I've been, you know, I grew up on Star Trek. You certainly, you know, you've been watching it pretty much all your life, and that's who we are. But like, look at some of the people we work with, who, you know, quite honestly, I could be their dad. Those people are, you know, they probably, some of them, maybe their first exposure to Star Trek was those reboot movies. So, you know,
I think one of the hardest things about doing Star Trek in general, like you said, there's 50 years of lore that you have to connect to and 50 years of visuals as a result. And some of this stuff, the design is just, it was contemporary sci-fi design at the time. So you're now becoming beholden to what was fashionable for a sci-fi show on a shoestring budget 50 years ago. It's, on one hand, you want it to tie in. On the other hand, one of the biggest things holding it back is having to tie into that kind of stuff.
Yes. And it's funny too, because to that end, you know, talking about me pitching to Star Trek, you know, back in the '90s, I eventually stopped because it became so difficult to come up with an original story idea. Like back then, you know, they had Deep Space Nine and Voyager on at the same time. So you were getting 52 episodes of Star Trek a year, right? Because back then, both of them did 26 episodes a year. So, you know, and then, so adding to that, you also had, you know, 178 episodes of Next Generation, and you had 79 episodes of the original series, and you had, you know, I think it's 22 or something like that of the animated series and the movies and all that stuff. And, you know, even back then, you know, you're dealing with like roughly 500 episodes that you had to come up with something completely different. And there were times I pitched to them an idea and they're like, that's great. We're doing it next week. Like,
hey, at least you had the inside track to know that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think that's where the episodic format kind of shoots him in the foot, because when you're trying to reboot and tell a new story every week instead of continue one that you already started, you run out of stories pretty quickly.
Yeah. And it's funny. There was an episode, I think it was something I pitched to Voyager, and they, you know, and it might even have been Brian Fuller that I talked to, or it was either Fuller or Braga, but, and by the way, I have met Brandon Braga face to face, because I actually took a seminar with him and Ron Moore. That was amazing, considering, you know, what those guys went on to, especially.
Yeah, that's like sci-fi royalty right there.
I know. Yeah, they did a seminar about writing for Star Trek at Detroit Star Trek convention, you know, like 25 years ago or something like that. And I went to that, and that was amazing. But what was I going to say now? I lost my train of thought. Crap. Might want to take this out.
Well, the Ron Moore part is interesting, because you were talking about Star Trek Continues and Axanar and all this.
Yeah.
And all the Star Trek alum that are attached to Discovery and the Orville. And it's always amazed me how free the studios seem to be with people reprising or at least referencing their involvement with Star Trek in other projects.
Yeah.
I mean, on the sillier side of things, did you ever see the episode of Portlandia where they end up abducting Ronald D. Moore because they're trying to write their own Star Trek?
No.
And he's kind of doing his own writing seminar in their living room because he's been taken prisoner.
He obviously went on to Battlestar Galactica, which is, you know, a classic. In practically every way was much better than the original, I think. And, you know, so yeah, to be able to talk to those guys. Oh yeah. I remember the story I was telling you now. So I pitched a story and they said, that's great. That's on next week. And I'm like, you're kidding. It literally was on the following week. So I pitched.
Do you remember what the story was?
I think it's had something to do with Tuvok, but I can't remember exactly. And I've lost all the notes that I had from those days. So I don't have it anymore, but yeah, it was literally almost identical, but you know, it was really cool, but at the same time, it was like, damn it. So
someone beat me to it.
Yeah.
That will get edited.
It's funny. 'Cause you know, it took so long to finally sell the story that I said, you know, I think I got to go back to school because I need something to fall back on. And that eventually led me to my current job. So.
Well, you picked the right time because apparently, you know, if you had been waiting on a new Star Trek series to come around and launch your career as a writer, you would have been very poor for a very long time.
Amen to that. People that I didn't even realize were tied to Star Trek. The showrunner for, I don't know if you've watched, speaking of Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman has another show on Cinemax called Outcast. And the showrunner of that, Chris Black, was a co-executive producer on Enterprise. And he was on staff for most of the run of Enterprise. So it's like, I didn't even realize that, you know, but see.
You know, in addition to story ideas running out after so long, it's really hard to find projects that don't have someone from Star Trek attached to them anymore. There's actually another podcast I listen to called Film Sack, and they just,
oh yeah,
they try to find the bad movies, you know, and one of their bits at the end of every episode is Star Trek connections, because there's always somebody in the movie or working on the movie that's done Star Trek sometime.
Yeah. All right. I think we should probably wrap it up. So, you know, this is kind of just an introduction to us and, you know, our kind of sensibility. We love Trek, but I think what you're going to hear from us is a pretty balanced, you know, objective point of view. I think between the two of us, and we certainly do, I do this with Walking Dead. If it sucks, we're going to say it sucks. I hope it doesn't suck. And I'm, you know, I don't want to cover a show that I don't like, but you know, I'm going to be critical, not cynical critical. Like there are some guys that I swear, you know, it's like, why the hell are you even watching this show, much less podcasting about it? You know, I'm podcasting about the show because I'm hoping to love the show. And, but at the same time, you know, you've heard us talk about the Klingons and, you know, some of the other stuff about it. If it's good, we'll say it's good. And if it's not good, we won't.
Yeah. I'm going to do my best to fight my own predispositions. The fact that they keep changing the Star Trek formula to try to modernize it and reach a new audience is actually one of the problems I have with it, because I had no problem with the core formula of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see how this show caters to both audiences. And I'm going to do my best to not hate it because it's different and not love it just because it's new.
Yeah. All right. So our plan is that we are going to come back with a little more of a deep dive, although we've covered a lot of what we know about the show, sort of at a, you know, level, but we'll go a little more into it before the premiere. We're going to our first episode. So that's next time. And then our episode 3, we'll be covering the first episode. So that is the episode that will be accessible on CBS in the US. And then a few days later, we will cover the second episode, which is going to be on CBS All Access only. And then we're shooting to record Monday night. So, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday morning, something like that, is when hopefully you'll get the episodes. Most of the time we'll depend on, you know, because like I say, I do another show, or actually cover two, that has a conflicting schedule. So, you know, we'll see how it goes between this show and that show. And the other thing we don't know about is how feedback's going to be because of, you know, people getting it the next day in, you know, internationally. So if we record on Monday night, we might not get much feedback. So, you know, we may cover feedback a week behind or something like that. I don't know. We'll figure those things out as we go. Anyway, I don't know what else to say except I'm really psyched and I'm pleased to be doing a podcast with you, Adam. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to have some good times. I'm looking forward to next week's episode in particular because we've covered what we know so far. Next week, I think we get to get into a little bit more speculation or what our hopes are for the show. And then, you know, we'll follow up the following week and see if it pans out or not.
Yeah. And next week, I'll tell you this after we stop, but I do have a prediction, but I'm going to hold it until next week.
Ooh, cliffhanger. I like it.
Da, da, da. What is it?
Yeah. Where's the soundboard on that one? That's what I was waiting for.
Took me a minute. Hopefully I will be correct with that prediction. Anyway, yeah, I got to get some Star Trek stuff. So we will have it soon. But, if you want to reach us, we've got the best doggone podcast domain for this show that you could get. And it's our name, StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com. And that will redirect to our network, which is Golden Spiral Media, on that website, goldenspiralmedia.com. And that is where one of the places that you can give us feedback. That's goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. So if you're hearing this and you want to tell us what you are thinking about the show and some of the things that we've said, you can drop us a line there. You can also call us at 304-837-2278. Make sure that you mention that you're calling for Star Trek Discovery. And we have a Facebook group. Not much going on there yet, but hopefully by the time we release this podcast, we'll have a little more there. It's at facebook.com/groups/Star Trek Discovery Podcast. You can also reach us on Twitter at Star Trek GSM. And we don't do this with The Walking Dead, but I am going to also try to get some feedback via email. So if you'd rather send us feedback through email, you can send it to us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. So one other thing too, we are going to set up a Patreon. We don't have all of the details of that set up right now, but you know, it's the first episode, so we're not going to ask you to support us yet. But we are setting up a Patreon for the podcast. But you can also support the Golden Spiral Media Network through various ways, which you can get to at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And you can also really help us out by rating us and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes if you use the old crappy app on your PC or Mac. And that is, if you go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple, you should find us on there and give us a 5-star review, hopefully. And if you don't like us, if you're going to give us a crappy review, at least be constructive, you know? So that, you know, just being nasty and mean doesn't help anyone, especially your karma. So anyway, Adam, got anything else to say for before we sign off?
Just piggybacking on that. If you want to be a keyboard warrior, go for it. Just have a good point.
Amen to that. All right. So we'll be back soon with another episode before the premiere. But until then, good night. Live long and prosper.